This podcast contains explicit content and is not suitable for all ages. Listener discretion is advised.
Hey everyone, Ashley here.
Hello, Abby here.
I'm Katie, always.
We have a really fun, awesome crossover episode for you guys today.
Our first ever.
Our first, for us, our first ever. Mm-hmm. I don't know about you, Abby.
Sweet baby first gay, ever? We've done one before with a really cool podcast that goes through like queer archives. I will definitely be send you guys the link and everything. It was really fun. God, we literally just went through personal ads of queerness and like talking. It's so good.
I love reading personal ads. That's awesome.
Oh, that's so cool.
Yes, people. Abby is the host of Sweet Baby Gay. Katie and I are the hosts of Always the Last to Know. And we're super excited for this episode.
And I really want to give you guys the name of this podcast just while I'm thinking about it. It's called Queer Personals.
Queer Personals. Nice.
They just go through queer personal ads. So go check that one out too. But yes, Sweet Baby Gay and Always the Last to Know crossover. And what are we talking about today?
Oh my God. We're going to talk about Eleanor Roosevelt. We're going to talk about some letters with a special friend of hers because I'm not in the business of putting labels on something that somebody didn't label.
Absolutely.
And we're going to talk about a cool mobster woman who has a connection to Eleanor, too.
Yeah, and I think we're going to talk a lot about speculation in general.
Yes.
Yes. Absolutely. I have a lot of speculation coming from my side, so a lot of speculation. But I'm ready for it. I'm ready for it.
I was going to say, why don't we get into a little bit of like who Eleanor was, just so people, because I'm sure not everyone has done the research that we have.
Yeah,
I didn't really know much about her before this started. So
American history, not the best subject in school. So like, I knew was she was a first lady. I didn't know much.
That was about my level of knowledge on her too, to be honest.
Yeah. I will be so honest. That is my current level of knowledge. Y'all are fully educating me on this subject. Because while we were doing the research for this, I was deep into the life of Marilyn Monroe.
Yes.
Really?
You have to excuse it. Yeah. Part four, the final part, was 2.5 hours long.
So
it was 100+ pages of Marilyn Monroe, which is why Ashley is taking the lead on the research for our segment, and I'm just here to bring vibes and some facts on Amelia Earhart.
That's and cool. Support. You can ask us. Yeah. That's great because you can ask us questions, and then we can see if we know the answers, and then if we're not, we'll just make speculations like this episode's going to be.
I was going to say, like, the way that I did my notes for this is very different from what I usually do. I'm usually writing, like, a story form. But for this one, I just have a bunch of bullet points.
I do, too.
About her. Yeah. So
hell yeah.
I guess first thing is, I didn't know that Eleanor was not her first name.
Shut up.
Yeah, it's Anna.
Anna Eleanor Roosevelt. Anna. Yeah. I had no idea.
I think Anna was like a family name, so she went by Eleanor. It's like multiple people in her family were also named Anna.
I would expect that to be the other way around. Eleanor Holt feels like it's more of a family
royal
name than Anna. Yeah.
Yeah.
Eleanor is a beautiful name. It is a beautiful name.
Mm-hmm.
I am envious of that name. Like a beautiful. I also didn't know that. So Eleanor Roosevelt, I'll just go real quick. Eleanor Roosevelt was the first lady to President Franklin D. Roosevelt. Mm-hmm. I did not know that they were also cousins.
Oh my God. The way that when I found that in my notes, I was like, stop, you stop right now. And they're not first cousins.
To
I don't
be
remember
clear,
how many apart it is, but it's still like.
I do. It was actually very apart. It was very apart. The second I heard, I was like, I need to know how related they are. And I like went deep dive.
Well, I love like this one note that I have goes, She was born in New York City on October 11, 1884, to Anna Hall and Elliot Roosevelt, younger brother of Theodore Roosevelt. Yeah, that Teddy Roosevelt.
Her Jesus uncle's Christ. Teddy Roosevelt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, Lord.
Yes. Oh, Lord. So it's her. So her great, 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 great grandfather, so that's five greats, is Theodore Roosevelt's great, 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 great four greats grandfather. So they're not that related. Like, I couldn't even tell you who my great, great, great grandfather is. I have no idea.
Yeah.
So, like, I could easily run into my great, my, like, fifth cousin and have zero idea. But
I kind of love that she didn't have to change her last name.
That makes it worse.
When I got married.
Yeah.
That makes it worse in my head.
It's like, you don't have, well, you know. Back then, the custom was to change your last name. Like, oh, do you have to do paperwork?
Like, I mean, it's dope she doesn't have to do paperwork.
I've been married for 6 months now, and we still haven't changed our last names.
two, almost 3 years here. And the plan was originally to do it, and then we got married during COVID, and I went, why am I going to do this paperwork during all of this BS?
It was hell just to get our marriage license. So, yes. Like, we're like, God, I don't want to go back there. No. But we need to do it because we want to have the same last name. But so we need to do it.
I'm just like, God, it was hell. Saddled with my partner's last name.
What's your partner's last name?
The American pronunciation is Uquiz. It's supposed to be like Yutskevich, and it's spelled U-T-K-E-W-I-C-Z. And I'm just like, U-T-K-E-W-I-C-Z. No. I don't want to have to do that. Reservations, doctor's appointments. No, thank you. I don't want to have to spell that out.
That's fair. That's fair. Yeah. No, I was very quick to change my name.
I like
Step Kid, though. Step Kid. It's easier when him and I have the same last name for like appointments and shit like that.
It's just fair. Easier. That's our thing is we're like, when we have kids, we definitely want to all have the same last name. So it's like, we're like, as long as it's done by the time we have kids, because
yeah,
it's important to me to have the same last name as my child.
Yes.
All right. Well, back to Eleanor Roosevelt. So, yeah. So she was born to Anna Hall and Elliot Roosevelt, and she had one sibling. And her parents died when she was like 11 or 12.
So young.
Shit.
So young. It was like her mom died. She died of, I want to say, like just cancer. And then 2 years later, her father succumbed to alcoholism.
Oh God.
Yeah. That's so she rough. Spent a, yes. She spent a lot of time living with her grandmother. And then when she was at 15 years old, she actually moved to England to attend a private women's
A boarding school.
A boarding school.
I was like, Katie and I know what that's like.
Yeah. Really? Y'all went to boarding school?
That's where we met.
Yeah, in high school. Boarding school.
Boarding school for bad kids. Let's be very clear.
Way different than what Eleanor probably attended. I don't think you were going to.
Although, to be honest, ours was probably started back then as a finishing school, especially because we had to wear white dresses when we graduated. Yeah. It's very culty.
Yes. Okay, so the school was called Allenswood School for Girls. School for Girls. And they said that she created like a special bond, and I think this like was the beginning of her just creating special bonds with women, with Mademoiselle Marie Sylvester.
Ooh.
Who took a special, she was the headmistress of the school, and she took a special interest in Eleanor because Eleanor just in general was like really smart and like charismatic, so everyone loved Eleanor. But then after that she moved back in when she was 18, and that is when she officially met the Theodore Roosevelt. I think they had met when they were kids, or sorry, Franklin Roosevelt, but like this was like their official meeting as adults and everything.
Wasn't it when she had her like coming out party when she came back to America, like their, what do they call them? Debutante ball. Something like that. And he was there. I'm pretty sure something he like was that. There. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to be like announced into society. Obviously.
She probably wore white then too. She was definitely wearing
probably.
White.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Ugh. Probably. Yeah. And they were engaged within like a year, like engaged and then married within a year. I did like find out though. So,
and then what, married in like 1905 or something?
Yes. Yeah. Engaged 1903, married 1905. So while doing research for this, I ended up listening to an audiobook called The Three Graces of Valkill, which I will definitely be going into more detail about because that is fascinating. But in it, they talked a lot about Eleanor's relationship with Franklin's mother, who was just like didn't really like Eleanor at all. Ooh. And she actually asked that they keep their like their engagement private for a little while. So it's like they got engaged and no one knew for like a year until they got married.
I wonder why she did. They say like, did they go into like detail about why she didn't like her?
I think that she just didn't like her because she was like just an ambitious woman and just like didn't like it was like I think it was like a time thing of like didn't like thought women should be like in the home and like Eleanor definitely like
the misogyny was someone coming from within
she wasn't
going to
be a good wife.
She was too ambitious. Yes,
oh my God.
Man, was Eleanor ambitious? She was an ambitious woman,
chock full of ambition.
I love an ambitious woman.
I also love that Teddy gave her away at the wedding.
Yeah, Teddy Roosevelt while he was president.
Yeah. Isn't that cool?
Katie's
like, no. No,
this is not okay. This is too royal family for me. This is like,
it definitely is.
You should have more problems with this. You should not be allowed.
I fully agree.
One person from one family and you're out. Sorry,
I fully agree with that because I didn't realize that they were related until doing this research. Yes. And like, it's like especially listening to that audiobook, it's like they were literally there were times where like Theodore Roosevelt and Franklin Roosevelt were like against each other in things. And like, what? Like certain like elections, like there was like family, like people running against each other within the family for like governor and like all this stuff. And it's like, why is this family suddenly so important to like the state of New York?
Crazy. Either way, the family wins, and I hate that. And then this is also before the U.S. had laws against two-term limits.
Yes.
We're talking about people who are just families are ruling for too long. I don't like that.
That is one of my first notes, is that she is the longest serving first lady in U.S. history, and Franklin served 4 terms. 2-year term limits were set in 1951 when the 22nd Amendment was ratified.
Four terms is so long. Imagine having Trump for 4 terms.
I think I would have yeeted myself off the planet.
He wasn't Trump, so I'm sure it was very different. But like, still, it's a very long time.
That's just too long.
That's 16 years.
That's too long.
It's insane.
16 years. Wow. Crazy. Who was it that they like created the rule for, though? Was it because of Franklin Roosevelt, or was it someone else?
I'm gonna look that up right now.
It was 51, so it was probably around that time. Yeah,
he died in the 30s though.
Oh, did he? Who am I thinking of then?
No, I'm sorry. He died in 1945, so it could have been him.
And so I'm pretty sure he died while in office.
He did.
Okay, because it was March 4th, 1933 to April 12th, 1945 was his presidential term. That's just too much.
Way too long. That's way too long.
When you're in a whole new decade, you should stop.
Way too long. That's the entire Great Depression, too.
Mm-hmm. God, that's crazy.
But that's not who we're here to talk about, because you know what? A lot of Eleanor Roosevelt is whenever like she comes up, and a lot of like research and like when you look at everything, it's all about how she was with like tied to Franklin Roosevelt, but like she had insanely like big accomplishments by herself, like in a lot of like aspirations separate from him. And like I think I learned a lot about that. Like she was like involved with the Red Cross during World War One. She started like a furniture company, which I have more to talk about that in a minute. She was like, she did a lot of work with like women's suffrage and like the League of Women's Voters, the Women's Trade Union.
I have a list too.
Ooh, please tell me.
Representative for the World Federation of the UN Associations, chair of that association's board of directors, the American Association for the UN, appointed to National Advisory Committee of the Peace Corps, chair of the President's Commission on the Status of Women. Like, the list goes on and on. It's incredible.
Damn.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She's fully so a ambitious. Humanitarian. Fully a humanitarian.
On top of all that, her, like, big passion was, like, teaching girls, too. Mm-hmm. Like, she had so many different positions within schools of, like, being a teacher, which I thought That's was awesome. Really cool. Yeah.
I love that while they were in the White House, she started holding press conferences and then allowed only female reporters into the room during these press conferences. Yay! Because, what was it? They were not allowed. Let's see. Yeah, they were not allowed in the presidential press conferences. What so her fuck? Own conferences had only female reporters.
Yes. Oh, like, yeah.
Good yes. for her.
She was so cool.
That's amazing.
She also, what was this? Served as the Assistant Director of Civilian Defense from 1941 to 1942 during World War II.
Holy shit.
Yeah. What a badass.
Badass. So we have the point that she is very accomplished, a very accomplished woman and a very badass. I think we should get into the juicy part of it all.
Yeah, yes. I want the tea. Tell me about her love life. That's why I'm here.
The part we're really all here for.
And not her love life with her cousin. I don't care about that.
We don't care about that.
We're going to have to start with it, but it's just going to get out of the way real fast. Because
Okay.
I'm going to let you handle that because I didn't look up anything about that. Okay.
I got that. So Eleanor Roosevelt, she married, as we established, Franklin D. Roosevelt in 1905. And within the first 11 years, she had 6 kids, but one died in infancy. Damn. So she had 5 kids that she was raising. That was within like 11 years. But by the 1920s, their relationship fell apart. So basically what had happened is Franklin Roosevelt, while away, because they lived in New York, but they both commuted between like Albany and New York City. And while he was away, he was having an affair with her secretary.
Stop.
No.
Yes.
Okay. First of all, FDR, fuck you. Second of all,
fuck
really?
You.
Secretary? Really?
Not only his secretary, her secretary.
I'm just like, that's... girl, where is the girl code? Where
the
is
balls.
The
balls?
That's so fucked up. The audacity.
The audacity.
The way that she could just control the schedule, too.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You want to know how she found out? She read their love letters.
Stop! Oh, so many people writing love letters to one another.
Well,
they couldn't text each other.
Exactly. Every time I read that, I was like, this is the equivalent of us going through our partner's text messages and finding shit.
Actually, yes. Well, it's been happening for centuries.
Of course. Exactly. It's never, since the early 1900s, people have been sleeping with secretaries. Ridiculous.
Oh my
God. And like they have to communicate somehow. And so that's literally the equivalent. Every time I read it, I just started laughing because I was just imagining it's the same thing.
Oh my God. You know, if that's so funny, I literally never thought about it in that context. That's hilarious.
Yeah. So that happened and it completely destroyed their marriage. Through their own writings, because a lot of like our information about Eleanor Roosevelt is through her writings and the writings of the people around them, because everyone around them kept a really good like log of their life and their routine. So everyone just said that like after that there was no trust between the two of them and like the love just kind of died.
Which is so funny considering like how much she did for him politically.
Yes. So a lot of people said that like she – it was very obvious that she loved him especially at the beginning of their marriage, that it was a marriage of love. And that even after this happened, you could tell that she still loved him. But a lot of it was just kind of a political alliance. Was just that they had children together, they were married, and at the time, it would, especially for with his political career, it would have just destroyed their lives if they had gotten divorced. Yeah. And it was like they just kind of decided that it was better for them together to stay together and everything. And he had like promised her that he would not see the woman again. Broke that promise, of course. I'm assuming I did not come across that information.
Okay. Yeah, he also promised a lot of shit on their wedding day, so I don't give a shit about what he promises.
Exactly. Yeah, so that's their relationship. And so, like, she's very involved in his political career. This happened in, like, the late 1910s, and he didn't get elected into president until the 1930s. Mm. So throughout the 1920s was her, like, time where she just kind of, like, took control of her own life and like using him as kind of a like leverage because she was still married to him, kind of like pushed herself off politically and like socially and economically and everything.
Good for her though. That's what you get.
That's their side of this political thing. I mean, think about all of the first ladies who have then jumped off and had foundations and their own political careers. Hillary fucking Clinton ran for president. Like, it's it's horrible to like look at this and be like, oh, like it's such a political marriage, but like they do get hopefully something out of it, the drive and the push for their own career. I mean, she's ambitious as shit. She's gonna make it work for her. I've been watching Scandal. Exactly. It's all about the White House. I think I know too much.
You're like, I think I know exactly
like,
how.
Like, oh, I'm an expert.
Now.
Please. I just watched 3 presidential elections. Like, I basically made a president. But yeah, she's amazing. I love her.
Oh my God. That's hilarious. Yeah. So I have a little bit to talk about for the 1920s because to prepare for this, I read The 3 Graces of Valkill, which was written by Emily Herring Wilson. And it is about the 1920s of Eleanor Roosevelt's life and how transformative it was. It's about specifically her relationship with Marion Dickerman and Nancy Cook.
Oh.
So.
Nancy Cook, why does that name sound familiar?
I know. I'm like trying to think.
I'm going to tell you guys the facts, and then I'm going to tell you guys what I think.
Okay.
So the facts are Marion Dickerman and Nancy Cook were in a relationship. They're both women, and they were in a relationship. We know that. That is proven fact.
Nice.
They became very close with Eleanor, and they were working on a lot of projects together, including the Valkill furniture company, because Nancy Cook, Nan is what they called her. She was a woodworker, and she actually like in the time of like working with the American Cross, she actually made prosthetics, which was like super cool.
That is so amazing.
Isn't that fucking cool? That's fucking cool. So they were very involved with like, she helped them build this company, and then they also were very involved with the like suffragists, and Franklin D. Roosevelt's like campaign and everything, and just kind of like working on the side of like women's rights for his campaign. Nice. And so they just built this really close friendship with Eleanor Roosevelt to the point that they together built a cottage for them to live on the Roosevelt property that they called Valkill.
Oh my God.
And you want to know what Franklin D. Roosevelt referred to this cottage as? The honeymoon cottage.
Stop.
Okay.
Wow. I'm telling y'all the goddamn truth. So those are the facts.
Wow. That's crazy.
Obviously, we know now that Eleanor Roosevelt was a sapphic woman herself. She loved women. We also know she loved men. She was not a lesbian. She was bisexual. I stand firm on that.
Agreed.
I'm assuming she had a romantic relationship with them.
Which also would be so interesting for the time because of the implications of polyamory and how people reacted to that.
Yes. So there's a lot of like talk. So all of this information comes from the book that I read. And there's a lot of talk of like that Franklin Roosevelt kind of like let her like, because he did fund and build the cottage for them. There was a lot of like the three women did help a lot with like Nancy Cook did do a lot of the furnishing and made a lot of the furniture. And Marion did a lot of the like helped with the design of the house and everything. And Eleanor Roosevelt helped fund it and stuff and like do decorating. So it's like they obviously had a very big hand in making this cottage, mm-hmm. but it was all like it was Franklin Roosevelt's idea to do it. So my thought is that he knew that they did not have a romantic relationship anymore, probably knew that his wife was gay. He probably knew it and was like, hey, I'm going to make let you go do this so you could be happy. And then I'll be happy over here, too. And we'll still be on the same property, still be able to like work together and have our family together. But then you can have this house with your friends.
Friends, quote unquote.
Yeah, yeah. History will call them friends.
History will call them roommates, even.
He's like, he's like, it's the least I could do since I cheated on you.
Oh, yeah. Man. And the two women, they had like a huge hand in like helping raise the Roosevelt's children and like did a lot of travel with them. And basically it said that like, the three of them were like inseparable.
I love that.
Which also, I love that. But also, if you're a couple and you're inseparable with another person, something's going on. Something's going on.
Something is happening.
That's so interesting because I do have a letter between Amelia Earhart and her husband, which is what people usually point to a lot, that points to her own marriage being very similar to that.
Okay.
So that's very interesting.
Would you can you share?
Oh yeah, I mean we can definitely get into that now because Amelia Earhart and Eleanor Roosevelt really their overlap was so small. They met at the White House. They went for a night flight. And you know, a lot of rumors are based on them. But this
Didn't
letter,
she stay at the White House though? Like Eleanor invited her to stay at the White House.
She stayed for a little bit, but nothing like nothing crazy, really, because Amelia died a few years after they first met. She wanted to teach her how to fly, but that never ended up happening. The potential for something was there, but it never really got to flourish because Amelia disappears. But she was married to a man named George Putnam, who she called GP. And we have this letter that Amelia wrote before they got married, which starts with, "Dear GP, there are some things which should be writ before we are married, things we have talked over before, most of them. You must know again my reluctance to marry, my feeling that I shatter thereby chances in work, which means most to me. I feel the move just now as foolish as anything I could do. I know there may be some compensations, but have no heart to look ahead." So she's like, not super into this marriage.
She
goes on to say, "On our life together, I want you to understand I shall not hold you to any medieval code of faithfulness to me, nor shall I consider myself bound to you similarly."
Oh, damn. Okay, she just spelled it out there.
Amelia! Amelia!
Foxy lady. Oh my God.
Yeah. If we can be honest, right? I think the difficulties which arise may be best avoided should I or you become interested deeply or in passing in anyone else.
Okay.
I'm in love with Amelia Earhart.
Right.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
What a fantastic energy. Oh, I'm so sad she went missing.
I know. In case
what could have been.
In case that didn't spell enough, she goes on, "Please let us not interfere with the other's work or play, nor let the world see our private joys or disagreements."
Okay. She's like, Let's have our fun. Keep it private, though.
I'm giddy right now.
Right?
This is why I was like, I kind of got to talk about this.
I'm giddy. So that's really interesting because in the book I was reading, so the book I was reading didn't talk too much about the relationship between Eleanor Roosevelt and Hick. It just kind of like lightly, if you didn't know about it, you would have just passed by and not realized that they were in a relationship.
I'm so excited.
But it does talk about how, I know, I'm really excited. But just real quick on this subject though, it does talk about how later in the relationship there is a letter where Eleanor is telling Hick that she doesn't want to be exclusive with her anymore. So like, and then you also put in the fact that she's like with these two women at Valkill, who also are not the only couple like lesbian friends that she has. She lived in Greenwich Village, was like around so many different people that were gay. And like, I'm like, all this energy leads to you were non-monogamous and gay. Like,
Oh, I was going to say, there's just a couple more lines of this letter that kind of touches on that same idea. In this connection, I may have to keep some place where I can go to be by myself now and then, for I cannot guarantee to endure at all times the confinement of even an attractive cage.
Wow.
Amazing.
She's like, even if you're hot, I can't be with just you. Even if you're hot, bro. Right?
Oh, that's so funny.
And I love how eloquently it's written.
So beautiful. She finishes it out with these two lines. I must exact a cruel promise, and that is you will let me go in a year if we will find no happiness together. I will try to do my best in every way and give you that part of me you know and seem to want. A.E.
That's the best prenup I've ever heard.
Right?
That really is.
That really perfectly
is. So is
written.
There any, like, is there any evidence that Amelia Earhart was queer in any way?
People point to this letter a lot. There's a couple, some lines in there, like the other's work or play and things like that. People do point to her as a queer icon and believe that when she stayed with Eleanor and when they went on their flight, that was a first date. And people point to these moments and friendships that she has. But it's a lot of the same thing where it's hard for me to follow these sources that are like, she was a lesbian, where I'm like, her and George were very clearly had something going on together. And it's hard for me to like follow, it's hard for me to apply these labels in which I know they wouldn't necessarily want to attribute to.
Yes. Sometimes it's so hard to see people so pointedly be like, yes, they were this, they were that. And it's like, if we have all the evidence that's leaning towards that, but we do not know for a fact because they did not say it themselves that they are this or that. So it's like, we can totally look at them as queer icons based on evidence, but we don't have the label from them. So let's stop putting it on them.
Yeah. And a lot of people will be like, oh, well, we can't use the weird word queer because that's not what they used back then. And it's like, well, that doesn't mean anything, like, because now you say lesbian, because a lot of people say Eleanor Roosevelt was a lesbian, but she has a lot of documented relationships with men where there's, like, sheets out, like, in letters and everything said that she was in love with these men. And it's like, you can't, by saying she's a lesbian, you're erasing half of that. And, like,
also saying, as a bisexual, like, don't use queer because it didn't exist back then. Well, I used to call myself bi in high school, but that's not what I actually am. I'm Pam. But now I have the language for it.
Yeah.
The right
So I can better describe it, better terminology.
Yeah. It's like if we didn't know what a cloud was, we still wouldn't be like, well, we can't call it a cloud back then because, like, that was a really bad example. We always knew what clouds
actually
were.
Like that.
No, that's the perfect example. We didn't have that word then, so we can't say
and straightforward.
That. Yeah, and it shows the absurdity of the idea. Like, no, what? That's a ridiculous notion. The biggest piece of evidence from that letter itself, people are like, well, she was tentative about wanting to marry him because at that same time, the Supreme Court was looking at same-sex marriages. And I'm like, that is a really big leap to make about someone's sexuality and the timing of a letter.
Wow. And to be honest, like, there are percentage-wise of the population, there are more people who are bisexual, pansexual, multisexual, like all of that under an umbrella, under the bi umbrella, that is the higher percentage than like lesbians are. And like,
I also love that it's like proving that straight should not be the default.
Okay, so that goes into something I wanted to talk about in the book that I was reading. And that's that they kept talking about all of Eleanor Roosevelt's like female friends. And a lot of them ended up being lesbian later, but there's no like evidence between the two of them. Probably because Eleanor Roosevelt was in the was in politics and had to keep it all hush hush. But every time they talked about one of like her female friendships, they just brought it up as strictly a friendship. And then it comes up that she had a similar friendship with the man Earl Miller. And suddenly the author's like, the difference here is that it was a man. And so it was most likely romantic. And that literally there was also between her and him, there's also no evidence, nothing that said it, just like there was nothing with like the female friendships. But it's like because it's a man, they wrote it as if like that was the romantic. So like when I was listening to it, I was like, cool. So now you're trying to put it in my head that she had a romantic relationship with this man, even though there's just as much evidence that she had a romantic relationship with him as there was for all the women.
And that is on society keeping straight as the default. And it's not.
And it's just, it's not. It was just so interesting to like read to like, so I was listening to an audiobook. So I was listening to it, still reading, but
it's reading. It's reading. It counts.
It's reading, but I'm going to keep saying listening. So as I was listening to it, it was like, I was just like, this is why when you write from the perspective of like assuming someone's sexuality, you erase it. The same way if they had written it, if the person had written it assuming she was a lesbian, they would have erased the half of her. You can't just assume one way or the other when there's like, she hasn't said either way.
Absolutely. Especially when there's like clear evidence of both.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And don't, I am going to show certain evidence, even clearer evidence
just towards to like. Being
I'm so ready. Can we please start talking about these?
Yes. With, yes. I'm so ready.
Because I read some and they're good.
Right. Before I talk about the letters and their relationship, I do want to tell people like a little bit of who Lorena Hickok is. So I'll try to do it fast. But I want to start with a little tidbit from the letters. A quote. I've been trying to bring back your face to remember just how you look. Funny how even the dearest face will fade away in time. Most clearly, I remember your eyes, with the kind of teasing smile in them, and the feeling of that soft spot just northeast of the corner of your mouth against my lips. And that is Lorena. That is Lorena in a letter to Eleanor in 1933.
Gay.
So wow. Gay.
The gayest thing I've ever heard. It's the gayest thing I've ever heard.
And like, wow. Lorena, full on, Lorena is gay. Like, we know that for a fact.
Yeah, that is like proof. Well, I mean, at this point, it's all, you read the letters, it's proven that both of them were gay. But it is like she had like out relationships with other
yes. too. Like, we knew at the time that she was out. Okay. Yeah. So she's one of the most renowned female journalists of her time, working for papers in the Midwest and New York before eventually becoming one of the first women to have a byline with the Associated Press. And for anyone who doesn't know what a byline is.
LOL, byline.
LOL, byline. she's one of the first women to have her name underneath the heading of an article in the Associated Press.
Hell yeah.
The first women.
That's
men had that their is names.
Crazy.
Men had that their is names crazy. For their articles, yeah. But she was the first one. So wow.
Good for her. That is crazy that it right? was, she was the first person.
Good for you. Like, I love that.
Good love for that. You, but I wish that it hadn't taken till you.
I know.
Truly, right? Should have been crazy. Sooner.
Should have been sooner. My next note is that she's best known as Hick, which Abby referred to her as earlier in the episode. She was born into a poor family in rural Wisconsin in 1893. At 14, she left her abusive home to work as a maid before a relative helped her finish school. After high school, she got a job on the Battle Creek Evening News. She moved to Milwaukee, then Minneapolis, where she found a mentor at the Tribune who taught her the ins and outs of the journalism industry. He also taught her a little bit more than that about, like, drinking and doing fun bad things.
This is I like fun bad things. Like, just all of this in general is absolutely incredible, because I was recently looking up the college stats of women just for decades prior, and we're talking about a time when, like, maybe 11%. Maybe. Yeah. That's pushing it.
Max, yeah.
Right? And it's like, you're just out here doing your damn thing. And I love it. Like,
it's amazing.
So he ended up giving her assignments that were not usually given to women, like covering politics, news, sports. In 1926, she was diagnosed with diabetes in a time where we just saw the invention of synthetic insulin. So it wasn't like a life sentence for her when it could have been just a couple years prior. At the time of her diagnosis, she was living with her longtime partner, Ella Morse, who was also a fellow journalist. According to Eleanor Roosevelt's biographer, Blanche Wison Cook, Morse persuaded Hickok to take a year's leave from the paper and move with her to San Francisco. But just before they left, Morse eloped with a man. Like, what?
What?
Girl, really? You could have had Lorena and you ran off with a man.
In San Francisco and you stayed to elope with a dude?
You chose a stinky man?
Stinky man?
I know he was stinky. I know he was stinky.
Absolutely.
Back then, yes. Even
back
still now.
Then, right now.
That's my partner's favorite insult, is being like stinky.
Stinky. After that, she decided to move to New York, and that's when she got her job with the Associated Press. And in 1932, she was assigned to cover Eleanor Roosevelt during Franklin's first presidential campaign.
What a meet cute. Ooh,
what a adorable meet cute.
She, like, didn't want to do it at first, too. She thought it was going to, like, send her back to, like, the women's area of things. But then after meeting Eleanor, she was like, no, this is a person we have to cover. She's like, no, this is gonna be good.
That's even cuter.
Right? I know. And even though they had, like, really different backgrounds growing up, one thing that they had in common was their incessant push to have their voices heard in rooms dominated by men, which, like, I'm here for that.
Where is this movie?
Right? Can we get this movie about them? You're going to ask that even more the further along we go.
Like, this is the cutest thing I've ever heard. She doesn't want to go. She sees a beautiful woman. She's like, no, she's amazing. She's also smart. Like, are you fucking kidding me? God damn it. I want to give it an Academy Award.
Where the hell is the movie?
No, dude.
This is
HBO.
HBO needs to do it. HBO needs to do it. And also, this is when it zooms out. You're like, they had one thing in common. Their need to, like, dominate a room, and then it zooms out, and then it's like, and they might have had one other thing in common, and then it's like all about their romance.
Yes. Okay. So I like someone it. Start writing this now.
Because we're saying it now, if they make a movie, we have the rights to the movie, right?
TM 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 works? TM. Yep. Yep. Copyright. I declare copyrighted.
What began as a professional relationship quickly turned into a close friendship and the connection of confidants. These women confided in one another, and Lorena became a trusted source of guidance and comfort to Eleanor. They became so close that in 1933, Hickok left the Associated Press because she could no longer be objective in her reporting. And that's on honesty and journalistic integrity.
Oh my God. And that's, like, the big moment in the movie where she's like, you don't understand. I have to leave my job because I love you. Are you fucking kidding
over me? My career? Oh my God.
I'm crying already. This is a beautiful scene.
Oh my God, I'm dying.
For 3 years, Hickok visited 32 states and provided detailed, salty reports on New Deal policy, living conditions, and politics to FDR, Eleanor, and Hopkins, which I can't remember who that
someone
is.
Someone who was involved at some point.
Someone who was involved in some point. Can't remember who that is. Didn't put their full name in my notes.
That doesn't ring a bell to me, so I'm going to... No. Was it a man?
I think it might have been. Meh.
Doesn't matter.
An astute, engaged observer, Hickok could assess the problems a community faced quickly after arriving and could solicit comments from locals that helped the Roosevelts see their policies from the citizens' point of view, which I think is really cool. She had a massive hand in Eleanor's adjustment to life in the White House. In fact, she was the one who suggested having only female journalists at Eleanor's press conferences.
Amazing.
Mm-hmm. She also edited all of Eleanor's My Day and Mrs. Roosevelt's Page columns, which were like news columns that she would write. One of them, I think, was monthly, and the other was like, I think,
my
like every
day
week.
Was, my day
or
was
my
daily.
Day was daily. She was writing daily on top of literally everything else she was doing.
For like a long time, like years.
Oh,
like
yeah.
Years she did the My Day column.
I mean, that's a political blog career. Like, that's some people's entire fucking jobs these days. And she wrote it by hand.
Mm-hmm.
When Hickok became executive secretary of the Women's Division of the Democratic National Committee in 1940, Eleanor invited her to live at the White House. These two spent nearly every day together by FDR's inauguration in 1933.
To FDR's inauguration, Eleanor Roosevelt wore a sapphire ring that Hick gave her.
Sapphic?
Is it a coincidence? I don't
it
think
might be,
so.
But we don't want it to be.
I
love that.
I'm just saying, I've never given any of my legitimately like best friends rings before.
If I have, it's like not a like, it's just like a hey, here's a piece of jewelry, not like a sapphire ring.
Yeah, right.
I wonder if she wore it on her ring finger.
Oh my God, I wonder if they had pictures then. We should see if we can find a picture from that day.
You keep going, I will look it up.
Yes, okay. Whenever they were apart, they sent many long letters to one another with declarations of love for one another, as you heard at the beginning of this. Also, one quote, "I ache to hold you close." You don't just say that. Oh, listen, Katie, I'm sorry, but I'm never going to tell you I ache to hold you close, okay?
No, please don't. That's not our kind of friendship because we're not secretly in love. I ache to hold you close.
Mm-hmm.
So romantic.
In 1939, Hickok would take a job promoting that year's World's Fair before moving into the White House for the next 5 years. After FDR's death, she followed Eleanor to Hyde Park, New York, and a cottage on the Roosevelt Estate, which I'm now putting two and two together.
Oh, so it was that cottage, but by then they had kind of like split up the cottage. And so Hick never went when Nan and Marion
like
were there
share.
Because they were like jealous. They were jealous
oh,
of
shit.
Each other. There was jealousy between the two of them and of Eleanor's relationship with the two of them. You don't get jealous when
right?
it's just
you
a friend.
Don't get well.
I mean, I do, but I'm working on it in therapy.
You can.
But in that time. Exactly. Yeah. Oh my God, that's amazing.
But yeah, they avoided each other. Like, they would make it so that when they were there, the others weren't. When, like, Hick was there, they weren't because they didn't want to see each other.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
That is crazy. Chupi! I know. Yeah. Can you please calm down?
Chupi's just like, oh, damn.
Lorena died in 1968, unfortunately due to complications from her diabetes. The exact relationship between these two fucking incredible women could never be known for sure because, again, they didn't tell us. And they took that shit to their graves. But they're very...
They didn't take those damn letters.
They're very loving letters to one another have given us insight after they were deeded to the FDR library by Lorena. And she asked them to not put them on display for 10 years after her death. 10 years.
She also burned over 300 letters because, quote, Eleanor was too explicit.
And so she burned them.
These are the ones that Hick was okay with us seeing.
And I have some quotes.
I do too.
During their 30 years of their friendship, they sent each other nearly 4,000 letters. There are around 2,300 of them at the library, 18 boxes of letters. And I'm hoping that they're like banker's boxes. You know, I hope it's not like little boxes.
That's what I was picturing. Like, that's what I'm
picturing.
I built
a banker's box today, so yeah. I'm hoping it was that.
You're like, this could be letters.
Now, I have a list of some of the quotes.
I do too. Do you want to go back and forth?
Can I
have five.
Can I give you my personal favorite one first, which is like literally just one quick line from it, but I couldn't help myself. It's so good. Yeah. My personal favorite, quote, "I'm getting hungry to see you." And that's from Eleanor to Lorena, November 17th, 1933.
Are you sure that's not a line from 50 Shades of Grey?
Dude, I'm getting hungry to see you. She needs to be satisfied. All right.
Whoa, Eleanor.
That's amazing. All right, I want to read you one that's from Eleanor to Hick. Let me get in the mindset. Whew. "My pictures are nearly all up, and I have you in my sitting room where I can look at you most of my waking hours. I can't kiss you, so I kiss your picture. Good night and good morning."
Oh my God. Is it getting hot?
Wow. Gay.
That's the gayest thing I've ever heard.
So gay.
This is the equivalent of having your long distance partner as the screensaver on your phone.
Yes. Oh my God. Here's my next one. "Dearest, I miss you and wish you were here. I want to put my arms around you and feel yours around me. More love than I can express in a letter is flying on waves of the thought of you." From Eleanor to Lorena, April 4th, 1934.
Ooh.
On waves of the thought of you. Like, damn, bitch. This is good shit.
Oh, yeah, right? Swift.
Wow. Oh, my God. All right, my next one. This is from Hick to Eleanor. "Dearest, it was a lovely weekend. I shall have it to think about for a long, long time. Each time we have together that way brings us closer, doesn't it?"
That way. It does what bring way? Bodies closer.
Oh my God.
Good for these two. These are
incredible letters.
I'm like so happy at the idea of like picturing them like getting the mail and opening their letters on
right? TV. Like, oh, it's cute.
Especially Eleanor in the White House where like I'm sure other people touched those letters and she was like, no one look.
This one's mine.
I'm imagining her like tucking it into her little boob pocket. The boob pocket.
Yes. Oh my God. I'm writing this whole movie in my head. I need to keep moving before I fully disassociate.
I have two more.
I have a couple more. "May the world be full of sunshine and our meetings frequent be hours of joy and quiet time. Take us over life's rough seas." Eleanor to Lorena, February 12th, 1935. The poetry.
Rough seas? So I think when you like write a letter compared to like a text, you have more time to like think about it. and like really put thought into your like words, whereas like texting's just quick, like you just send it. So I think these people were just way more poetic in general because they like had more 100%. Time to think about their like writings.
Yeah, like, that makes sense. That definitely makes sense.
All right, my next one from Eleanor to Hick. I also realized I was not giving the dates. I apologize. Okay. I will real quick, the dates for the last ones were March 19th, 1933 and January 22nd, 1934, mm-hmm. respectively. So this one, gee, what I wouldn't give to talk to you and hear you now. Oh, dear one, it is all the little things, tones in your voice, the feel of your hair, gestures. These are the things I think about and long for. Eleanor to Hick, January 27th, 1934. Gestures. What gestures are you talking about?
Oh my god. Please, can someone please write to me like this? Like, I know I'm married, but like, I damn, know, right? Dan, you need to step it up. Hick, my dearest, I cannot go to bed tonight without a word to you. I felt as though a part of me was leaving tonight. You have grown so much to be a part of my life that it is empty without you. Even though I'm busy every minute. Eleanor to Lorena, March 5th, 1933.
Busy every minute.
My heart.
Whoo!
My heart.
My heart. Jesus.
Please tell me they're buried next to each other.
I feel like it'd be travesty of justice if they're not.
I don't think they are. I wish they were. I don't think they are, though. All right. My last one. This is from Hick to Eleanor, April 19th, 1934. Oh, damn it. I wish it could be there when you feel as you did Sunday night and take you in my arms and hold you close. Well, I'll try to make you happy every minute when I'm there in May.
Oh, my God. The aspirations.
Ooh, as you feel as you did Sunday night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How did she feel? Okay.
Shit. We catch the drift.
We got you.
I have a few more. Hick, darling. Oh, how good it was to hear your voice. It was so inadequate to try and tell you what it meant. Jimmy was near, and I couldn't say, je t'aime et je t'adore, as I longed to do, but always remember I am saying it, and that I go to sleep thinking of you and repeating our little saying. Eleanor to Lorena, March 7th, 1933.
Who's Jimmy?
I don't know, but also like, fuck you for Jimmy for kids? Being there. Rude in the moment. I don't know. I don't know who Jimmy is.
I've never heard of Jimmy. I'm going to look that up real quick.
I'm going to read another one. This one's a little bit longer, but like, oh, you're going to be so happy that I read it.
Real quick, before you go. Jimmy James Roosevelt is the second child and first of Franklin and Eleanor.
Do I
Roosevelt
slightly feel bad for saying son. Fuck you for being there because it was a child? Yes.
No.
Am I going to retract my statement?
Okay, sorry.
No.
No. I'm sure every parent feels this way sometimes.
Mm-hmm. They're like, wow, you really ruined the mood.
I felt that way a lot when I first got my dog, so like I can't imagine a child.
It's weird when the dogs look at you when you're trying to have intimate time. You're just like, can you please get out of the room? Thank you.
Don't even get me started. Oh my god. Annoying. All right, next one.
Eleanor to Lorena, April 9th, 1934. This will be just a note to tell you I love you.
So cute.
That one's so making cute. Me tear up. Oh.
Yeah. Like, it's just, I'm just thinking of you. I just wanted you to know.
That's really sweet.
This is my last one. And I think that this one, I know I read my favorite before, but I think in like sweetness terms, I think this one is my favorite. I meant what I said in the wire I sent you today. I grow prouder of you each year. I know no other woman who could learn to do so many things after 50 and to do them so well as you, love. You are so better than you realize, my dear. A happy birthday, dear. And you are still the person I love more than anyone else in the world. Lorena to Eleanor, October 8th, 1941. I have tears in my eyes.
So sweet. What the fuck?
Just like the support.
Is a wire like a telegraph?
Probably. Okay. That's where my mind went with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's so sweet.
And it's so fun because it's like, you already sent her a telegraph and now you're writing her a letter in the same day. I love it.
But she's like I'm covering my bases. Like, I sent flowers and chocolates.
Doing the most. If for some reason they were not lovers in the way that all of these letters convince me, the level of that kind of friendship and support is like a truly beautiful thing.
Mm. Yeah.
A truly beautiful thing.
I agree.
And that is my part about Lorena and Eleanor and their incredible amazing love letters. Which now I want to go to the FDR library and go see these letters in person.
Understandably.
Can we take a field trip?
That's in New York, right?
Where is it?
We looked it up. It's in New York.
Yeah, right? It's Hyde. I think it's Hyde Park, New York. No. Where did we looked it up?
Oh. I think we looked it up. It was in Greenwich, I thought. I can look it up.
Yes, okay. Hyde Park, New York.
Oh, it's in Albany. It's
like I think it's either part of or close to that estate that they had up there.
Yeah, which was in Hyde Park, so that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All right, that's easy. That's easier than getting to the JFK Museum in Texas.
In Texas. We're taking a field trip.
It also just sounds more pleasant than going to Texas. Yes. I think we talked about this last time because y'all are along the East Coast and I'm in Richmond. So it's just mm-hmm. like, just ride the train up.
Right?
Yeah.
Easy, quick train ride up. I'm here for it. Do you want to talk about your gangster mob wife?
So this is just speculation. I'm just going to let everybody out there know. And it's not quite going to hit as well as our Hick story. But Eleanor lived in the – so this is just like just another example of someone that we could speculate was, if not in a relationship with Eleanor, was at least a queer friend of Eleanor's. Her name is Anna Genovese. She was the wife to mobster Vito Genovese of the Genovese family. And she is well known for being gay. I'm talking like she was running during Prohibition, she was running the gay clubs in Greenwich Village type of gay.
Oh, that's shit. Okay.
Yes.
Yes.
Her and Eleanor for a little while lived in the same building in Greenwich Village.
Okay.
It is known that they would take meals to each other.
Ooh. Okay. Meals. Is it code word for something?
For themselves. I don't know. So I'm not going to go too much into it because we have gotten a lot of information. But if any listeners want to listen to it, we have an episode about Anna Genovese on my podcast, Sweet Baby Gay.
Ooh. Hell yeah.
Definitely going to listen.
Yeah, I have to check that out.
I know. I feel like, Katie, you've been really into the mob. People have been very the forefront of your life.
They've been very adjacent to everything I've been reading about lately.
I love that. I'm going to also recommend. So for me, it's episode 11 of Sweet Baby Gay. We talk about Anna Genovese and Jane Addams in that episode. This was back when I had my old co-host Autumn on the show. But okay. I got most of my information about her on this podcast, amazing podcast called Mob Queens. And it is a... I want to say it's either 8 or 10 episodes, and it is all about, it's like a documentary, style podcast. It's it's 12 episodes all about Anna Genovese and, her and her relationship with her, husband. And because it is juicy. It's juicy. Ooh. And, I'm talking, she went in court and, talked about snitched on her husband in court type of
shit. Oh, damn.
That type of juicy. And this podcast is so good because like they are reporting on it as they're getting the information. So like as they're finding all the information and doing all their research, they are recording their episodes. So like at the beginning, they don't, because there's not much like documented about her. So it's a very much like them piecing puzzle pieces together and everything, because women in general were not documented very well at the time. So as they're like putting the puzzle pieces together, that's when they're recording. So at the beginning, they don't even know if the story's going to go anywhere. They're just like, hey, we're a little curious about this woman. Let's like do some little research about her.
Wow, that's so cool.
I need a new podcast to listen to.
It's amazing. It's such a good podcast. I've listened to it like 3 times. I also have ADHD, so I re-listen to things all the time. So put that
in mind. It's like rewatching your favorite shows.
I do it. It's a bad habit I'm actually trying to break, because I'm sure it would free up a lot of my time. But very good podcast. And so Anna Genovese is known to have been friends with Eleanor Roosevelt, and Anna Genovese herself is known to be queer.
Ooh, I love it. And it's like, even if Eleanor somehow was not queer at all, the fact that she was so surrounded by the queer community is just something that like brings me comfort, especially with all of her humanitarian efforts.
Yeah. Even if she wasn't herself queer, she was still part of the queer community. And like, I think that even if she wasn't queer, we can still consider her part. Like, I think it could be that she's socially queer.
Oh, yeah.
But these letters, man. These letters.
No, there's no way. There is no way that she was not gay. There's no way.
Yeah. It's like, we're not going to put a label on you, but you are one of us for sure.
Icon.
You are talking about kissing women. Yes.
The northeast corner of the lip.
Like, the soft spot on your lip. There's no way.
There's no way. There's no way.
You're hungry for her? I'll never get, like, please, give me a whole book of those. Turn it into a book, all of them, and I'll eat that shit up.
Absolutely no way she's not gay. I just don't believe it. Jesus Christ.
Well, I think that's about all I have.
That's all I have, too.
Her and her lovely relationships.
I learned so much.
I'm so glad. Ooh. I was also all weekend, I was like itching to talk about it. And like,
Here's the thing, I feel like we've been planning this for so long. And then I was like, oh my God, the day is finally here.
Absolutely.
I know Ashley's been itching to talk about it because she's been trying to talk to me about it. And I've been like, no, I want it to be a surprise. And then like a day or two will pass and she'll be like, I've been getting my notes just like perfect. Do you want to hear some of these quotes? And I'm like, no, Ashley, I want it to be a surprise. And I can tell she's just like, someone just talk to me about this shit, please. And I know that feeling so hard.
Yes. Sometimes when we're recording our own episodes, we do not share with each other the topics sometimes. Yeah. And it's those weeks where I'm just like, what are we talking about? Like, I need to know, or I have so many things that I want to tell Katie, but it's like, we can't yet because we're not recording.
This is my wife when they're planning a D&D session. They're like, can I talk to you about it? And I'm like, no, you can't, because I'm surprise. One of the players.
Like, I can't be cheating. This is
exactly.
Cheating.
Like, also, I would like to experience it firsthand.
Yes. Oh my God.
This was so lovely, though.
This was amazing. This was great. We have to do this again.
We do. We have to find. Trust me, I will find. I like really want to dig into the like who was gay in history. I also would love to dig into the who was polyamorous in history. I would love to dig into that. The person who wrote Wonder Woman was polyamorous.
Ooh, really?
Yeah. That's fascinating.
Mm-hmm. I love that though.
Possible episode. Just saying.
Interesting.
We do like nerdy things.
We do.
You're like looking off into space. You're like,
trying to think. I'm also trying to think of like some queer conspiracies and some stuff in the government, but I'll have to look around, see what I can find.
I love that. Ah. Well, I guess goodbye to our listeners. I in each of our, so this is going to be posted on each of our links. I will definitely make sure to put to like in description link y'all's
of course
podcast and the same and everything.
We'll also do that.
Yeah, we'll make sure everything. Guys, everything's going to be co-linked. You will easily be able to find each other, like all the other podcasts.
Without further ado, we'll see you all next week. Bye.
Bye. Bye.
For any photos related to today's episode, please go to our Instagram.
You can follow us on Instagram and TikTok at AL2KPodcast.
Like us on Facebook at Always the Last to Know Podcast.
If you have any questions, please email us at AL2KPodcast@gmail.com.
Please share, rate, and review us on your podcast listening app of choice.
Join our Patreon. You can find us at patreon.com/AL2KPodcast or click the link in our bio on social media.
Thanks for listening.